This episode's audio was generated using AI technology.
You know that highly specific, just visceral feeling when you first give a junior engineer full access to the production environment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the mandatory sweat phase of engineering management.
Right, exactly. You just hand over the keys, you watch them open up their terminal, and suddenly, like, every single Slack notification sound makes your heart completely skip a beat.
You're just sitting at your desk, intensely monitoring the logs, waiting for that inevitable unindexed drop table command to just completely take down the primary database cluster.
Yeah, but the thing is, at least with a human engineer, you know, they have a natural biological rate limit, like they type at human speeds.
Right.
They have to actually stop to read the documentation, they get confused, and they spend, you know, 3 hours searching Stack Overflow for some bizarre error code.
Yeah, I mean, they get tired, they go to lunch, the damage they can do is, well, it's throttled by their physical limitations.
Exactly. But what happens when you hand those exact same production keys over to something that that doesn't sleep, something that types thousands of lines a minute and feels absolutely zero anxiety about taking down the entire system?
Well, you get chaos, usually.
Which is exactly what we're getting into today. Welcome to another episode of Kernel Panic. Our mission today is to analyze this massive, I mean, fundamental shift in software engineering. We are moving from simple code completion tools to fully autonomous agentic development.
Yeah, and we really need to figure out how you architect, secure, and, you know, actually configure these systems without completely wrecking your repositories.
Because the entire tooling landscape hasn't just shifted a little bit, it has been fundamentally rewritten overnight. So we've got a really dense stack of highly technical sources today to help us figure out how to survive this transition.
Which we are definitely all going to need.
For sure. We are pulling from an April 2026 academic paper by HappyBody detailing the new agentic SDLC. We also have an architectural analysis of OpenAI's newly open-sourced Codex Security CLI.
That one is fascinating.
It really is. And we are pairing that with a really sharp critique on runtime vulnerabilities published by StackHawk. And finally, Duke University's gritty, like, code-level configuration best practices for locking Codex down.
So basically, we are moving from having a really smart autocomplete dictionary in our IDE to managing an eager junior developer who can actively execute shell commands and, you know, push commits straight to main.
Yeah, which is terrifying. But to understand why this tooling is so disruptive to our normal workflows, we really have to look at the hard data regarding how fast these agents are actually evolving.
Right, because we aren't just talking about iterative updates here. We are talking about a complete paradigm collapse.
Let's look at the numbers because they are staggering. So for you listening, the gold standard right now is the SWE Bench Verified Benchmark. This tests an AI's ability to pull down a mature Python repository, read a real-world GitHub issue, and then independently write the code to resolve it.
Which is a very hard task.
It is. And in October 2023, systems could only resolve 1.96% of those issues.
Basically useless.
Right. Completely useless. But by April 2026, systems like Claude Opus 4.7 are hitting 78.4%.
That is just a massive jump.
We went from practically zero to nearly 80% in 2.5 years.
Mm.
But, you know, the foundation models themselves didn't get that much bigger in that specific time frame. So what actually caused that massive spike in capability?
Well, it wasn't just throwing more raw compute or, you know, billions of parameters at the problem. The breakthrough was actually the introduction of scaffolding.
Scaffolding.
Yeah. The Princeton SWE agent research essentially proved that the agent-computer interface, or the ACI, matters just as much as the raw intelligence of the model itself.
Let's break down that mechanism, the agent-computer interface, because this is crucial. An LLM on its own, it just outputs text tokens, right? It predicts the next word. It can't actually do anything.
Exactly. The ACI is the translation layer. It takes those text tokens and maps them to concrete operations on a real computer.
So it basically gives the model a custom bash shell, the ability to navigate file systems, and the hooks to run test suites. We finally gave the brain a pair of hands.
And we didn't just give it human hands. We gave it hands optimized for an AI's specific type of cognition. Happy Body's paper actually formalizes this evolution into a 6-layer reference architecture for agentic systems.
Okay, let's walk through those layers, because if you are building software today, you have to understand the stack.
Yeah, for sure. So layer zero is your foundation model, right? That's the raw reasoning engine.
The LLM itself.
Exactly. Mm. Then layer one is reasoning and memory. This is where the system holds its chain of thought planning and tracks its current state.
Okay. And then layer two is that ACI we just mentioned, right? Translating the plan into action.
Right. And layer three is the tools and environment. Now, this isn't theoretical. This is the actual, you know, sandboxed Ubuntu container where the agent lives. It comes complete with the compiler, the linter, the runtime, everything.
Got it. And layer four?
Layer four is orchestration, which handles single or multi-agent coordination. And finally, have layer five, which is governance and safety.
So when you stack all those six layers together, you get what Badati calls the agentic SDLC, or the ASDLC.
Yeah, and it totally flips the traditional model. In a standard software development lifecycle, you know, you write the spec, a human designs the architecture, a human types the code file by file, and a human writes the tests.
But under the ASDLC, your role shifts dramatically. Like, you define the intent. Then the agent drafts the spec. Coding agents execute the plan. Testing agents generate the test suites in a sandbox. And you, the human engineer, you basically just serve as the final approval gate.
Yeah, we've all essentially been promoted to tech leads. Or, well, maybe demoted to project managers, depending on your perspective.
Right. But I think the crucial shift here is the velocity. The standard unit of work shrinks from a 2-week agile sprint to a cluster of tasks an agent completes in minutes or maybe hours.
Which sounds great, right?
Well, I have to play Dale's advocate here. If the unit of work shrinks to minutes, do we actually net any real-time savings at the end of the quarter? Or do we just spend all of our newly freed up time managing the agent's inevitable, just bizarre mistakes?
That is the big question.
I mean, I can easily see a scenario where debugging an AI's hallucinated architecture takes twice as long as just writing the feature myself in the first place.
So the data actually points to a pretty complex trade-off here. Researchers call it the technical debt hypothesis. First, to answer your question directly, the immediate productivity gains are undeniable.
Okay, so it is faster.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Controlled experiments at Microsoft by Peng and colleagues, they tracked developers building an HTTP server. The engineers using agentic workflows finished the task with a 55.8% time savings compared to the control group.
Wow, over 50%.
Yeah. So you were definitely shipping features faster. But there is a massive hidden cost accruing in your code base health.
Because agents have a severe bias toward generating more code.
Right.
Right? Like, it is incredibly cheap for an AI to generate 1,000 lines of boilerplate. It doesn't get carpal tunnel.
Exactly. Furthermore, Bauer's technical debt hypothesis proves that agents heavily prefer local fixes over global redesigns. And this really comes down to the mechanics of token limits and attention economics.
Walk us through that token economy, because this is fascinating. If I ask an agent to fix a bug in a specific module, what does it actually do?
Right. So it's going to patch the isolated function where the error surfaced. It is highly, highly unlikely to load your entire repository's dependency graph into its context window, realize the root cause is a flawed architectural pattern in your data layer, and then rewrite 3 different upstream services to fix the structural issue.
Because doing that costs too many tokens.
Exactly. It costs too many tokens and it dilutes the model's attention mechanism. It's just much cheaper and computationally faster to just slap a localized Band-Aid on the single file.
Which creates an immediate bottleneck, which is the human reviewer. This is the economics of attention problem. If an agent can produce, say, 10 plausible functional patches an hour, the absolute rate limiting resource is you.
Right. A human physically cannot review the long-term architectural implications of the code as fast as the agent can write it.
But let me challenge that premise for a second. If an AI agent creates a highly localized fix, slaps a Band-Aid on the function, and the CI/CD pipeline runs green, I mean, who cares?
Security teams care.
But a passing test suite is a passing test suite. Why is a localized hack worse than a human taking 3 expensive days to do a massive global refactor?
Because that localized hack introduces silent fragility. You are building an automated house of cards, and it will eventually collapse under its own maintenance burden. And this becomes terrifyingly obvious when you look at the security data.
Oh, the security data is brutal.
Yeah, security teams are currently experiencing unprecedented burnout for this exact reason. A study by Dry Run Security analyzed these AI-generated pull requests, and they found that 87% of them contain vulnerabilities.
Wait, 87%? That is wild.
Yeah, nearly 9 out of 10. We are talking about broken access control, severe business logic failures, OAuth implementation gaps.
So the agents are writing code that compiles perfectly, passes functional unit tests, and entirely compromises the system.
Exactly. They're introducing vulnerabilities at breakneck speed.
Which brings us to how we actually fight fire with fire. OpenAI just launched the Codex Security CLI. This was formerly an internal project codenamed Aardvark, and they recently open-sourced it under the Apache 2.0 license. We really need to dissect this because there's a wildly different approach to traditional static application security testing, or SAST.
Yeah, anyone who has managed a CI/CD pipeline knows that traditional SAST tools are just notorious for generating thousands of low-impact false positive alerts. Oh, it's terrible. The signal-to-noise ratio makes them almost useless. Developers just start ignoring the warnings entirely.
Right, it's just alert fatigue. But Codex Security completely changes the mechanism by operating in three distinct stages. Stage one, instead of just running regular expressions against your code, the AI reads your entire repository and builds a semantic, editable, project-specific threat model.
Which is a huge shift.
Yeah, it actually maps out what your system is intended to do conceptually.
And then stage two is the real technical leap. It doesn't just flag a potential buffer overflow and, you know, throw a Jira ticket at you. It actually attempts to validate the vulnerability.
This is the sandbox phase.
Right. It operates a sandboxed environment where it writes a custom exploit payload, fires it at a cloned container of your application, and actively sees if it can trigger the vulnerability. It pressure tests its own findings.
And by verifying the exploit organically, OpenAI reported this validation stage cuts false positive noise by 84%.
84% less noise. That is incredible. It is. During its beta period, this autonomous validation found over 10,000 high-severity exploitable bugs in major, heavily scrutinized open-source projects. We're talking about things like OpenSSH and Chromium.
Then we get to stage three. For the vulnerabilities that successfully execute in the sandbox, the agent proposes minimal patches. And because it built that semantic threat model in stage one, the patch actually respects the original intent and styling of the surrounding code.
Right. It isn't just injecting a generic breaking fix that ruins your formatting.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do need to point out a massive asterisk on the words open source here.
Yes. The deployment model.
Yes, the deployment model. The CLI, the schemas, the SDK, basically all the external plumbing, that is entirely open under Apache 2.0. You can inspect it, tweak it, integrate it. But the actual back-end inference engine doing the heavy lifting, the neural network orchestrating the sandbox and writing the exploits, that remains beta-gated and hosted on OpenAI's proprietary servers. So if the actual scanning engine is closed source, what is the practical value to an engineering team of having just the CLI open-sourced?
Well, it really solves the distribution and friction problem. By open-sourcing the CLI, OpenAI makes it trivial for platform engineers to drop this directly into their pre-commit hooks, their GitHub Actions, or their GitLab CI pipeline.
Okay, so it's about workflow integration.
Exactly. You can configure a severity threshold that automatically halts a build if Codex validates a high-severity bug. You don't have to wait 3 days for a security engineer to run a manual fortify scan. The security check happens at the speed of the merge path.
But even with that slick pipeline integration, relying solely on an AI agent to read your source code leaves massive gaping security holes. And this is where the Stack Hawk critique we read comes in, pointing out exactly what Codex is fundamentally blind to.
Yeah, because Codex is fantastic at static code level bugs, heap buffer overflows, double free memory leaks, standard SQL injection patterns.
But it's only looking at static files in a repository.
Exactly. The agent cannot see the environment it will actually be deployed into. StackHawk highlights that Codex completely misses infrastructure misconfigurations.
Right.
It can't see an overly permissive cores header set in your cloud provider. It can't see an exposed debug mode accidentally left on in an Nginx proxy configuration.
So your source code can be perfectly mathematically secure, but if your deployment config exposes the entire backend to the public internet, you are fully compromised.
And it won't flag a thing.
Yeah. And the most critical blind spot of all is BLA. Broken object level authorization. For anyone who has built an API, you know Bole is the absolute nightmare scenario. It sits at number one on the OAuth API security top 10.
It's so common.
It is. Bole is when you make an HTTP request to, say, a P1User104 receipts, and you simply change the 104 to 105, and the server gladly hands you a different user's highly sensitive financial data.
And static analysis struggles immensely with Bole. An AI reading your Python or Node.js source code just sees an ORM database query pulling records based on an ID. It looks perfectly normal.
Right, there's no syntax error there.
The AI cannot tell if your complex authorization logic, your middleware, and your session management actually hold up under real-world conditions. You have to test real, authenticated JWT session tokens at runtime to catch it.
Which is exactly why StackHawk insists that AI code scanning must be paired with DAST, Dynamic Application Security Testing. You use codec security at the repository level to catch the memory leaks as the code is typed, but you absolutely must run DAST in the pipeline to actively attack the running compiled application.
The analogy I really like to use is that relying on SaaS tools like codecs is like reading the AI agent's resume and checking it for spelling errors and logic flaws.
Okay, yeah.
It looks good on paper. DAST, on the other hand, is locking that agent in an escape room and watching to see if they try to pry the hinges off the door using brute force. DAST attacks the application exactly how a threat actor would.
I love that, the escape room test. So we know these agents have blind spots,
yeah.
And we know they can write dangerous code incredibly fast. So how do you practically restrain them on your local development machine?
This brings us to layer 5 of the architecture we talked about earlier, governance and safety.
Right. Let's look at Duke University's April 2026 Best Practices for Codex Configuration, because it highlights how managing AI requires a totally new programming discipline. To control an agent, you aren't just writing clever natural language prompts anymore. You are building a strict, multi-layered configuration stack.
Yeah, and it starts at the foundational level with the config.toml file. This is where you establish hard runtime controls. You don't just ask the agent politely not to do something. You physically disable its capabilities.
Like cutting off the internet.
Exactly. Through the ACI, you can configure the OS-level sandbox to drop all outbound network packets originating from the agent's shell commands. It literally cannot open a socket to the external internet, no matter what code it writes.
That is a great hard boundary. Next up the stack, you have .rules files. These are enforceable execution limits. For example, Duke strongly recommends writing a rule that intercepts system calls and forces codecs to prompt the human user for explicit cryptographic approval before it is allowed to execute destructive commands.
Like get reset hard.
Yes, or RM-RF. You absolutely must prevent the agent from irreversibly nuking your local Git history in a moment of hallucinated confusion.
It happens more often than you'd think. Then you move into the context management layers, which are the agents.md and skill.md files.
Let's talk about agents.md first.
So agents.md basically acts as an onboarding document for the AI. It sits in the root of your repository and defines your project norms, your specific test command flags, and your architectural styling.
But you have to keep this file incredibly lean, right?
Yeah.
Because every single word eats up the agent's context window limits and raises your inference costs.
Exactly, which is exactly why Duke recommends using skill.md for specific on-demand tasks. Instead of loading every single instruction your team has ever written into the context window for every prompt, skill.md acts as a dynamic router.
How does that work in practice?
So if you ask the agent to parse a massive data set, the orchestrator conditionally loads csv.md into the context window. If you ask for a front-end visualization instead, it drops the CSV rules and conditionally loads charts.md. It is highly efficient token management.
Looking at these guidelines, you realize we are really shifting from writing explicit syntax, like the how of program, to configuring the complex boundaries of the what. You see this paradigm shift most clearly in layer 4 orchestration. Walk us through how orchestration actually functions in a real development workflow.
Okay, let's say a senior engineer drops a massive 5,000-line pull request onto your desk. Instead of reading it line by line yourself, you prompt Codex to spawn 3 distinct sub-agents in parallel.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, you spawn an explorer agent whose only job is to trace the execution paths of the new code and map the logic. Then you spawn a reviewer agent tasked entirely with searching for edge case missing tests. And finally, you spawn a docs researcher to cross-reference the new logic against the external API documentation.
And the orchestrator handles all of that.
Right. The orchestrator manages their system resources, waits for all three independent agents to finish, synthesizes their outputs, and hands you a unified executive summary of the PR.
That is immense leverage for a single engineer.
Right.
But, you know, with that level of autonomous execution comes the ultimate risk that Duke warns about, which they call the lethal trifecta of agentic security.
Oh, the lethal trifecta. This is so important.
Let's break it down.
So the lethal trifecta is the dangerous intersection of three specific agent capabilities. Number one, access to private data, like your production database or environment variables.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the ability to externally communicate, meaning it can execute curl commands or API PuSD requests.
Right.
And number three, exposure to untrusted content.
Let's paint the picture of what actually happens when you combine all three of those. Let's say you give an agent read access to your internal database credentials. You also allow its sandbox to communicate with the external internet. Finally, you ask it to summarize a random, untrusted, open source GitHub issue from a public repository.
You've basically just built a bomb.
You really have.
Yeah.
You have just engineered the perfect storm for a prompt injection attack. A malicious contributor could hide an invisible instruction in that GitHub issue that tells your agent to read your private API keys from the local environment and silently POS them to an external server in Russia.
It's terrifying.
Duke's warning is explicit and completely non-negotiable. You never configure an agent to have all three of those capabilities simultaneously.
Yeah, you have to break the chain. Looking back at the terrain we've covered today, I mean, we are fully entrenched inside the agentic SDLC. The underlying architecture has evolved from simple text prediction LLMs to complex six-layer agentic systems driven by the agent-computer interface. And this evolution grants us undeniable productivity gains, but it massively accelerates technical debt and shifts the bottleneck entirely onto human architectural review.
Exactly. And to survive that bottleneck and manage the risk, we have to integrate tools like the Codex Security CLI directly into our CI/CD pipelines. We use it to catch static code-level bugs the second they are committed, while recognizing we absolutely still need dynamic testing, or DAST, to catch the runtime access control failures that AI is just fundamentally blind to.
Right, the Boolean vulnerabilities.
Exactly. And on the local developer level, we must lock these autonomous agents down using rigid configuration stacks, intercepted system calls, and Duke's lethal trifecta principles.
It is a profound balancing act, really. We are aggressively delegating the execution of software engineering, but we must fiercely maintain the supervision and the boundaries.
Which leaves us with one final, slightly terrifying thought for you to ponder. If our primary job is shifting from writing code to orchestrating agents and managing boundary configurations, what happens when the models get sophisticated enough to start writing the threat models and configuration rules for other agents?
That is the big question.
If one AI is dynamically generating the dot rules file and another AI is validating the pull request, and a third AI is autonomously pushing the patch to production, will human engineers eventually be entirely extracted away from the actual mechanics of the code base? Will you and I just end up serving as a final, exhausted approve button, clicking yes on a massive, incomprehensible chain of automated decisions?
That might just be the ultimate house of cards we are currently building.
Just waiting for that eager junior developer who never sleeps to finally execute that drop table command. Thank you for tuning into another episode of Kernel Panic. Remember to audit your dependencies, validate your runtime access controls, and closely watch your token limits.